Hey, pay attention now. Go ahead.
Well, no, no. If you're trying to extend the digital divide issues, perhaps it's not blanketing a residential area with a wireless access. Perhaps it's partnering with cable companies and maybe providing that access that way, or a DSL company provided that way, and having a broader partnership with SP that's not just a wireless-based partnership. So, you know, just a random thought from a wireless guy, but it's not just about wireless.
You're welcome to make that random thought, and if you hadn't called Randy or something.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the
thank
time.
You very much.
We
look forward, to having your continued input and involvement. The next person who signed in was David Nwachukwu, who is from the airport, it looks like. Talk about use the city as an anchor tenant. Is David still here? He is.
Yeah, I didn't know I would be speaking, but I just want to
but now that you have the opportunity, you'll think I might.
By the way, I'm from Oregon. I went to school in Oregon, Oregon State. That's where I did my Master of Science, so I am a little bit
another
of a
beaver.
Anyway,
I'm the whole damn. Go ahead.
At LAX, I work with the wireless group. We are doing wireless Wi-Fi and all that at the airport. We did a survey to find out what's there, who is installed, what kind of systems we have here. We also, at this time, things were stalled a little bit, but at this time we are going to have one of the telephone companies use the telephones to deploy broadband access, wireless access all throughout the airport. This will provide coverage, then after that we're going to provide coverage, in-building coverage, and using hotspots and all those things. We're also working on wireless 4.9 gigahertz. This next week we're going to San Diego to see the mesh technology demo, which will be done by Motorola, and if we like the technology, they will bring it out here on 4.9 gigahertz sometime late spring, and that will be done at LAX. So we're also doing, you know, wireless things, activities, and all of this is intended to generate revenue for the airport. So it will be nice to see how all this can be tied in, working with the city, downtown, and all that, to make sure that LAX is fully covered. That's all I have to say.
Well, that's very helpful news. Thank you very much. Questions? Yes, Reggie?
You decided to go with 4.9. What was the reason?
Well, the reason for 4.9 is because it's a frequency that FCC just put out not too long ago. There aren't too much technology in that area right now, but Motorola has, well, it's a public safety frequency, so that gives us more control of the technology.
The reason I ask is you mentioned that LAX wants to make money, and are you, because that's a separate, is that separate objective from 4.9?
Yeah, it's separate from 4.9.
Okay.
The money making is actually in the Wi-Fi area,
okay.
Probably Wi-Fi from the
future.
Yeah.
It sounds like they went to 4.9 because Ken bought money, but that, you know, I don't know. Any other questions? Yes, Curtis.
I think it was in today's newspaper, yesterday's newspaper, it may have been out at the McLaren in Las Vegas, they talked about the use of RFID tags for luggage purposes. I know, Reggie, you may want to comment on it, but is that on the horizon? Are those being looked at sometime
yes.
in the future for as a way to keep
yes,
track of luggage?
Yes, we are looking at that intensively. In fact, we have a bigger project, multi-million-dollar project called IT Security Master Plan. So all of that, inland baggage, wireless checking, all of those things are being looked at. And we're spending a lot of money in that area like never before. Like we have a lot of consultants, Cisco, and all kinds of companies involved. It's a very intensive work that we are doing, and it's all for the benefit of the public, and in some cases to generate revenue for the airport.
Yeah, if you're doing things in RFID, we invite you to join us at UCLA at the RFID conference.
Mm-hmm, that was
there'll be about
Wednesday.
March, about 80 companies
Wednesday,
on March 9th.
Okay. I believe we were at UCLA some time ago. 5G network, they did a demo for us. The only question I have for this group is something you want to keep in back of your mind is so we make sure that the terrorists don't use this, whatever you're playing against them. I remember when I went to UCLA, there was one of the things they did there was you couldn't use your laptop in the classrooms. Now, wherever the terrorists are always interested in where you have a large number of people. So the question should be in our mind how to avoid such incidences where we have problems with the technology that we develop. So if you remember, Musharraf was crossing a bridge, and this was the technology they used to save his life. So they would have killed him if he had not used some jamming technology to kill all the signals around him. So when he crossed the bridge, then they blew it up. So we need to keep this in the back of our mind. How can we secure the city, especially if you have buses, you have people, large number of people, trains and all those things? We should think about the security of the people as a part of implementing whatever technology we're implementing. This is a very critical time we're in, as everybody knows.
Thank you very much for those comments. I guarantee you it won't be in the back of our mind, it'll be in the front of our mind.
Okay.
If it isn't, Russell, make sure it is. Hmm?
You could follow that up with this question of the business arrangement with, between LAX and the provider. What is the arrangement? How is the revenue generated for LAX, and how is that worked out with your partner?
Well, what we are doing now, actually, we are implementing it right. We just have the RFP going out, mm-hmm. and it has been presented to the Board of Airport Commissioners. So we have a percentage that we are asking through the RFP, we are asking a percentage of the revenue. So we will have access to all the equipment installed, the airtime, the usage, and all those things. So a certain percentage of whatever the company, the winning company makes, will be delivered to LA.
Would you expect, when you do that, would you expect the rate, again, when we've talked about some business travelers and all, of which I'm one, would you expect, because it's a captive audience, would you higher, would you expect it to be a rate lower, because it's a risk city facility? What is your mindset?
Well, we are following a model. By the way, Denver International Airport is one of the airports that are putting comprehensive wireless network all over their places there. We are following a model, and they are making a lot of money, so it's Burbank and all that. So we think that we will be able to charge a competitive rate, and this will be open to competition through the RFP process. And we would like to maximize our revenue, but it will be based on a competitive basis. And also, Ontario has wireless, but then that's just for the general public at this point. We are also working to install or implement systems that will help us generate funds.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No, but thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kobe King is next. And Kobe's thinking about whether he wants to take the mic, and then he said, of course I want to take the mic.
I only signed up. As a tensor, I want to say the cookies are very good. Well,
thank you very much. Thank you.
That's it.
Toby would prefer to make his other points in private. Okay, the next speaker is Marco Robles from Unisys Corporation. So you're representing Unisys, but you're listening. All right. Well, now this gentleman likes to talk, but I don't know that he wants to speak as a speaker. Mark Strassman, Etopia Media. Mark, where are you? That's Mark Strassman.
Thank you. I want to.
First of all, we're all pleased to meet you in person instead of doing all this phone stuff.
I want to thank all the people who did interviews on NoWire LA already, and the ones who may be doing it in the future. I wanted to introduce myself in several ways. I'm an alumnus both of USC for a summer program and UCLA for a weekend seminar. There you go. And of Grant High School here in Banff. There you go. When President Kennedy hosted all the American Nobel presidents in Washington, he said there's more intellectual firepower here than any time since Thomas Jefferson died here alone. And I'd like to say that the intellectual firepower here is very impressive to me, and I assure you, each of you separately and all of you together know more about nuclear technology than even Thomas Jefferson did. And I'm very, when he knew intellectual property, he knew more. I'm very impressed and hopeful that this much expertise and networking savvy can get together and really create something for Los Angeles that will do everyone proud. The one big idea I wanted to drop into the mix here is a more political, sociological one, involving the neighborhood councils that the mayor has set up as a means of empowering the local areas in the city. And I wanted to urge you to look for a role for them, either with current Wi-Fi, better Wi-Fi in the future, other means, to set them up as WISPs, wireless internet service providers, so that they can collect information from the community, develop business opportunities within the community for the commercial people there, be an outpost of e-government for services and, again, input, and work with them. I did an interview this morning with the press deputy of the mayor's office about the $100,000 that the mayor just said will be used for street repairs in each neighborhood council. And as best I could, as a reporter, tried to move the conversation around to whether they might want to have that money used for Wi-Fi or other needs instead of making the streets better. I set up a really short-lived group once called Bits Not Asphalt. And you're now on the Bureau of Street Services hit list, but that's very nice of you. I couldn't be any worse. to the extent that you're involved politically, I'd like to see you working with the mayor and the city council and those groups to say that an investment in the, even a directed one, for the city the neighborhood council, is giving them money to set themselves up as WISPs to do all these things they can do, education and so on, would be time and money well spent. The final theme I wanted to touch on comes from a French intellectual, I guess. Popular that's going to be right now, but Fustel de Coulanges, he wrote a book in 1864, 101 years before the Watts riots. He said one of the main reasons that the Greek city-states disintegrated was because of too great an inequality. He said the division of wealth within those communities was too great to keep them going. And Los Angeles is not immune to this. Nathaniel West put it in the Day of the Locust, the Watts riots showed it in reality. The civil unrest in 1992 demonstrated it again. And I think that internet technology has a potential to level up. That's the two words I wanted to stress, level up. That everyone who has the services now, and the wealth now, and the opportunities now, should have that and more. But the people who have less should be leveled up, I think in Los Angeles, I think in the whole world, that would increase the stability in Los Angeles and the world. And I think that internet technology has the capability of doing that because it can bring the best education, the best business opportunities, and all of these things to people at an extremely good price point, whether it's paid for by them or by companies or by the city. And so leveling up through internet broadband technology is something I think you should be addressing. And if you have any other questions, I can address them.
Okay, I just thought maybe the thought of handing every neighborhood council, there's 84 of them by the way, $50,000 to build a Wi-Fi hotspot might have put somebody up there. That was nobody else to pay. Real new? Okay, thanks. Okay.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you for your continuing coverage of the work of this panel, too. We'll try and keep you informed as we go. A shameless plug, yes, please. We are open.
Right. The website is called Unwired LA, and the easiest way to get there is to go to utopiamedia.net. That's Utopia. It comes from a book from William J. Mitchell, who heads the media lab at MIT now. The subtitle of the book is Urban Life, Jim, But Not As We Know It. And Utopia is a place where everything is done electronically. And the name of my company is Utopia Media, Utopiamedia.net. And if you go there, you can scroll down and it'll say Unwired LA, go there. My email address is utopia@utopiamedia.net. And if you haven't been covered enough, interviewed enough, please email me, set up a time. We'll interview you, put you on the network, let everybody hear everything you have to say. Thank you.
It's always nice to have our own private scribe and recorder. Denise Longley from Lampstock.
Denise? Still here?
Gave it up. Next sign-in was from Davis Park of the Little Tokyo Services. Heard a little bit about wireless in Little Tokyo. You want to tell us a little more?
Yeah, first few minutes of the...
Well, it was brilliant, but it's okay. It was just me.
Yeah, my name is Davis Park. I'm the program director of community technology at the Little Tokyo Service Center. And we are one of the beneficiaries of Department of Water and Power's economic development grant, and they're providing fiber with construction to one of our data centers and one of our affordable housing projects. And they also provide us with an equipment grant to deploy wireless throughout the community, which is built at east downtown, south of the Civic Center. We have a community technology center program there that provides technology access, basic technology training, up to advanced digital video editing production for ages everywhere between 4 and 94. So we're truly a community center. We provide all kinds of technology access to the community and the world in 6 days out of the weekend. Our center is wired through DWP pipe through a fiber coming to our data center. And we're linked up through space, high capacity through space optic laser connecting. One of the things that I just came back from Sacramento, where we had a legislative briefing on the digital divide, and I was really stunned to learn that the digital divide is actually worsening and not improving as the recent report came out that's called Information Online, that's published by Department of Commerce. And one of the things that we found is that people who are non-speaking backgrounds, people from immigrant backgrounds, people from poor backgrounds, a lot of the sort of traditional measures of disservice communities are less and less, they have a greater tendency to not be online. And one of the traits that the study looked at was also broadband access. And broadband access is increasing, but only among those households that do have the education and those that do have the income. And those who are in disserviced communities or underserved communities tend to have less access. And so within these low-income communities, like in the ones that we serve, for example, people come to our community centers for these access. They come into our centers for training, they come to our centers for knowledge and for the skills they need in order to survive their life, whether people job skills, whether people education enhancement, and so forth. So the broadband access disparity is certainly widening across the income levels. In the lower bracket of the income levels. So, I just like to kind of go back to what was said earlier by a gentleman from Cisco, and which is the need to really look at the application. What is it that we're trying to accomplish here? Are we trying to just simply wire the entire city, give everyone access? Well, what some of the things that I'm concerned with communities that I work in, some of the things that we're concerned about are community economic development programs, educational enrichment, neighborhood safety issues, and some of these things were touched on this afternoon, but it's again really important to go back to the programmatic elements of what wireless deployment in Los Angeles is going to look like. And to accompany those kinds of this deployment with the programmatic support that's necessary in order to run them. So if we're going to be setting up access points throughout First Street in Los Angeles, are we just going to set them up and then just let people kind of do what they want with them? Well, why don't we also provide some training behind this? Why don't we invite schools? Why don't we invite them as partners on this and allow them access to these kind of services as well? So some of my questions to the Commission are, like, what is the Commission doing to ensure the participation of those who most need this sort of access? I'm kind of struck to see that there aren't very many folks represented in the communities that I work in that are here this afternoon. And I think they would have a lot of really interesting things to say, a lot of really valuable feedback. And how do these community issues fit into the purview of the Commission? So I don't exactly, I'm not complete there on what the Commission needs.
First of all, it's not a commission, it's only a panel. Our charge is to complete a vision statement by April to guide policymaking and planning in the city for the vision over the next 5 years of high-speed access to the internet, whether it's wireless or potentially other phones.
So we're planning.
Yes, we're not drawing up action plans, we're not setting out requirements for laying out a vision and so forth. But we do appreciate your commentary here. Since this particular pilot has been alluded to, we heard a little bit about the experience here at Garden Brody. Can you say anything about what benefits have accrued to the Little Tokyo area as a result of this economic development grant from the WP?
Yeah, well, we've got several hundred people use our wireless access to our wireless network on a regular basis, and the uses range anywhere from training to support for nonprofit staff, and we have I believe we have four nonprofit organizations and programs that are currently linked into our network, but we also have our data center in which like hundreds of users need to depend on for things like basic email service or web development service or website services and hosting. So, again, these programs that we're providing service to range anywhere from very, very basic service, social mental welfare services to like housing development to the arts to a wide range of community development.
And under this grant that you received, did the users of, say, something as basic as email service pay for that service, or is it part of their communities?
Some of them do pay for some of the services.
Could you give a brief rundown, kind of a range, in specifics of some of the training or some of the technology training that goes on there, maybe from the most basic to, say, the more sophisticated, and I'm saying a little below the digital video editing and stuff. I mean, some of the, just a range, and also is there a website or someplace we could go to see a real kind of comprehensive list of the types of training that take place there?
Yeah, you can go to littletokyowireless.net, and that provides information about the programs and all the various organizations that are linked into the network right now. Some of the trainings that we're currently providing this weekend, we had a pre-packed workshop on working on helping senior citizens and some of the low-income residents of our affordable housing project. We have the volunteers can come in, and they learn how to do a tax online. We have some people who come in who have never ever touched a computer before, and so we have a choice. That's how basic we can get. We have web development classes, we have publishing courses, we have programs on digital video production. And so we also partner with students from Central Continuation High School, where they come once a week and they learn basic digital video production. We also have a program in which we work with seniors and help them preserve a lot of their cultural artifacts, a lot of their cultural memories through digital forms, so they can expand a wide range of cultural
memories.
We also provide trainings in English, Japanese, and
For the benefit of everyone here, like for you to go backwards and explain the problems that Little Tokyo Service Center had presented to CRA. You know, Little Tokyo Service Center is a major stakeholder of the redevelopment agency in Little Tokyo, in which you were experiencing bandwidth issues, internet service providers going bankrupt. Can you go through that whole list, the woe is me problem that you had?
David, briefly.
Okay. Well, the whole discussion actually started several years ago, in which we were a community development corporation, which means that we seek to develop housing units and other efforts that sort of help preserve the community of Little Tokyo. And one of the questions that we had back then was like, how do we access fiber? We've got miles and miles of fiber throughout the city of Los Angeles. But we realized that bringing information technology services to the community was really, really key to the overall economic and community development of the area we're working in. And every door that we went to, every ISP, every major player who owns some fiber pipe in the downtown Los Angeles area shut their doors and our base said, we're not going to tell you where our fiber is, and we don't even care to work with you because this is supposed to be secret and you're not supposed to know this sort of stuff. And so it was really frustrating for us to seek out, or for us to try to access these resources, because no one was willing to talk to us because we're from a nonprofit organization and the community was not really important to us. Until we met with Curtis and started talking with Department of Law and Power as part of the Office Division, and they wanted to use this as an opportunity for us to deploy wireless internet services because it was available and it was becoming more affordable. So they wanted to use this as a demonstration project. And it has worked out really well as far as our community benefiting from this project, and we're just about to deploy a second wireless hotspot in the downtown Little Tokyo area. We've already set up one free hotspot near our cultural center, our Union Center for the Arts, and we are also in the process of even widening the scope of our wireless deployment and trying and hooking up with other agencies agencies such as those that provide services to the Skid Row area. So we are in discussions with some other nonprofit organizations that are interested in functioning.
Thank you. Mark, and then
Sure. David, also, I just wanted to reemphasize, even though we kind of alluded to it but didn't articulate it, part of the mayor's vision also, that I guess the key drivers for the mayor in looking at this is economic development, helping to bridge the digital divide, and last, also to improve government efficiency. And we've talked through some of that, but those were clearly articulated by the mayor, so he's very conscious on all three of those. And also, I'm glad to see the technology side very well represented here tonight, and I share with you little disappointment in, on the community side, because we sent out email notification to over 2,000 individuals, and splitting actually both on education and neighborhood side as well as IT technology side. So
I'd be more than happy to deliver 25 people at your next.
Well, we have thank you. We do have one more community speaker and one more technology speaker. Todd?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that from the center's viewpoint and where I'm coming from on City amongst this group is we're really focused on what the user can do and might want to do and what are going to be good positive outcomes for them. Whatever technology it takes to get there doesn't really matter to me, although I like my gadgets, but we're really focused on what we can do. So for instance, you talk about the digital divide. I mean, we're worried about delivering healthcare because we think in 5 years that's the way that healthcare is going to be delivered. It's going to be by broadband. For automated monitoring, for long-term health, for long-term care. Education is that way. One of our major projects focuses on multimedia literacy. We've got a lot of experience going into K through 12 sector and working with schools, and we know what happens when you give them tools and then you walk away. So we've gone through programs where that's, we have teacher training, we have bootstrapping workshops, and then continuing relationships. So there is a sensitivity to the fact that you don't just flip the switch and walk away. That's guaranteed to fail. And that you've got to have some sort of community support, and you've got to worry. In fact, a large section of the report that we're working on is focused solely on customer outcomes, not looking, there's almost no mention of gigahertz spectrum or anything. It's merely what are they going to be able to do with the bandwidth that you give to them, and how are you going
don't
to
worry,
make
it so they can
put it in. It's in the other part, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, in the interest of our time tonight, I thank you very much, Davis, and I have two more speakers. Jim DeFreeman might be the answer. DeFrew from Tropus Networks, and I have Yudi Machado, which I also probably butchered the name, Mid-City West Community. Anybody else, just so we know how to judge our time? Well, come on up here and put your name on here, and we'll join you for the list. Jim's next.
Thank you very much. I'll try to be brief. I know you've been going longer than that.
My name is Jim DeFrew. I'm with Tropos Networks, and I'd like to just share with you a little bit about what our experience has been in deploying Wi-Fi networks. Real briefly, as an introduction, Tropos has been around for close to 6 years, and primarily the bulk of that time has been developing RG beta testing Wi-Fi metro scale networks. We went to market in 2004, and going into this year, we currently have over 125 mesh networks deployed. It was early on decided that the tenets of this technology was to base it on the standards. So we have radio agnostic technology, and we are watching the standards, building the standards that this technology obviously evolved with. But right now, Wi-Fi is what's here in this real world. There's over 75 million Wi-Fi devices out there. You know, not just a centrino chip in your laptop, but parking meters, utility meters, video surveillance cameras. And we're seeing that being deployed everywhere. So, The thing that we've done, and we've got a lot of networks that you're familiar with. I mean, the network right here from the center is Tropos. We don't generally deploy our networks directly. We go through integrators, Wi-Fi systems, integrators, and WISPs providers. We deploy the networks. But this is our network. Pershing Square will be our network. We have a network going up in Fullerton, Laguna Beach, Encinitas, Northern California, the Peterson Trial, Milpitas, San Mateo, just to name a few.
So what I'd like to do is to tell you about a couple of cases, because, you know, you've heard about Wi-Fi. I mean, in fact, 2004 was the Metro Scale coming out probably really for Wi-Fi. It was a huge year news-wise and development-wise for Metro Scale developments in Wi-Fi. And Tropos was fortunate enough to be a part of that. I'll give you three examples, and I'll spend just a few minutes on each one to tell you what some of our novel view of the market is and how it's been evolving. Jasta, Minnesota is a suburb of Minneapolis. It's a city that owns utilities, and they had one reason to put in a network. They already had DSL, they already had cable, they had a digital divide. It's not an economically strapped community necessarily, it has a broad spectrum of economic families there. But they did have some that could afford broadband, they had some that couldn't. And as one of the other gentlemen mentioned, they wanted to raise the level so that everybody had access to it. They wanted, you know, wireless broadband, which is what you're talking about. And the way they decided to do that was to provide economic they did that in about 2 months themselves. They acted as the integrator and the installer. Now, granted, they're only 15 square miles, about 7,500 homes, but their goal was to make it available to everyone. They put the network in, they deployed it so that all 7,500, within 100 or two possibly, they have some farms out there, but had access to the network. They had a two-year goal of breaking even. And the break-even point was to sign up 2,000 homes, so those 7,500. They did one marketing method. They sent out one flyer in the utility bill to advertise the network 6 weeks before it was deployed. And within a month of going live, they had the 2,000 subscribers. They now have 2,000 subscribers. So it's real, it's Metro Scale.
How much were they charging?
What they're charging is $16 a month. And you know, so that's why they have between 25 and 30% take rate with only one advertisement there. That was their initial goal. Now, the other things that they're gonna do, which we're finding with a lot of these networks, is once they've met their initial need, which was to provide the internet access to everyone, there's other usages for it. Within a couple of months, they're gonna be adding the access to the system for the police department and other public safety agencies. And they've got other reasons for the network to be used. They figure that they'll easily be able to increase from 2,000 to 3,000 with just one more advertising offer in the utility bill. So it's proven there that it works, and it works on a citywide basis. Another example is Corpus Christi, Texas. Corpus Christi, Texas started out with a pilot. They had an 18.5-mile section of the city for which they wanted to deploy Wi-Fi. Simple purpose of doing their automatic meter reading. They provide utilities for the city. They did that, and they did it in that zone. It was so successful that they decided to expand it to the rest of the city. They now have over 50 miles deployed, and the process of going into the 447 square miles. They're adding public safety, they're adding utilities, they're adding public internet access. And talk about education, they have some areas of the city that were so strapped economically. The school systems didn't even really have what you could call valid textbooks for their students. So what they were able to do, and another gentleman I think mentioned that we're not just talking about a wireless issue, we're talking about these things. They did come up with somebody that would provide workstations for these students, and now they have broadband. So you had kids who didn't have a textbook, and now they've got a computer, and they've got broadband access anywhere in the city to all the information that they need over the internet. So that's the common theme, I guess, is that, yeah, you had pilots early on, and now those pilots are Metro Scale, and not only that, but they start with one usage, and they're just expanding. Corpus Christi hosted a conference for PTI in October. There were over 250 city managers and IT directors from around the United States, and they got there for one purpose, and that was talk about Wi-Fi and what the possibilities were. And to a city, they were all not just committed to it, but saw it as an absolute necessity. And in one of their open sessions, they talked about, well, what is really the killer application here? What are the reasons for these networks other than the ones that we've clearly defined and some of the ones that I've looked at here? And pretty much what they came up with is, you know, we're putting in a wireless cloud over the city. We don't even know how all it's going to be used. It simply is an infrastructure. The applications are simple. The applications exist now. You've got an IP address, you can get to them. So deploying those applications is not necessarily that difficult. It's the infrastructure that you want to put in.
And the last example I'll tell you about is Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City is in the process of being deployed now, and they are using it initially strictly for public safety, for police, fire, and for EMS. All of their public safety mobile users are going to be accessing the network through the entire city. This is over 600 square miles. And they have nearly 900 mobile public safety users that will be accessing the network. So those are three examples that I wanted to talk about. You know, there are a lot of pilots out there. There are a lot of projects that could be called pilots, but there are a lot of real metro scale deployments. And so where you're going is doable, I guess is what we're trying to say. We deal with a lot of integrators and a lot of WISPs, and we focus our technology on evolving standards and making sure that our units work and continue with the technology. So we'd like to be a part of your project before I talk.
Thank you very much, and just alert you to Tara's earlier comment on RFI for city facilities for lots of little trophies, pieces of equipment. Anybody
This is a general digital divide question because three things are usually referenced by it, which are distinguishable. There are a number of people who don't even have a computer or not trained to use it, and that's been a problem since the beginning of the computer age in digital divide. Then there are people who just do not have broadband access. There's no cable on a fixed basis in wherever they live, or perhaps even where they work. DSL isn't there yet, or by cable, or what have you. And then there are people who do, but can't afford it, right, at the current rate. Do you have any general observations about those three classes of folks when you see the digital divide in these geographic areas that you've played with?
Well, the one example I gave you for corporate stations where they have a lot of people who are from an environment where they couldn't even afford, they didn't have to get their homes access to a computer. And they address that in a pretty unique way, and that's obviously something that they're a separate issue. They had in Chaska was more of the example where they could get to the network, they just couldn't afford to drop their taxes. And so that's why what they intended to do was to make it available to everybody and to make it affordable at $16, and that's what they did.
Any other questions? I'm sure there may be some. Kurt?
I believe Tropos has been involved in projects using surveillance cameras for public safety purposes. Do you want to talk about those projects?
You talk about those projects?
There's three I'll mention real quickly. You can go to Milpitas right now and you can get in a fire truck and you can go to an incident and you can see live video of the incident scene. They have a lot of accidents there. At the intersections of some of the freeways, 237 and 880. So they put video surveillance cameras up at those locations, and they send that video back to the fire station, so they can actually respond and see what's happening before they get there. In Redwood City for the San Diego County Sheriff's Department, they put in a video surveillance system around the outside of that campus. You know, that trial became almost an event there of a small city scale, if you will. And it was also probably the most challenging wireless environment that you could get because you had all these transmitters from the networks going on throwing out all kinds of interference. And so, I think the report was here. And what they found is that when they put in our mesh, you were able to route around the interference. So that worked quite successfully.
Is putting up video surveillance on all of their high-crime intersections, something like 8 or 9.
Every block in New Orleans.
Yeah. I mean, they have fiber to a lot of those locations, and so the camera information is transmitted that way. And then they have a lot that doesn't from the Tropos wireless network. And, you know, once you've got that video back at the digital video recording equipment and at the dispatch center, of course, what they want high resolution information for evidence, but also can then a compressed mode be sent out to people like they're doing in Milpitas and do it in a way that's manageable for the bandwidth standpoint. So, multi purpose networks are the key. That's what we're
most grateful for your comments here tonight. Because of time is short, we may be back to you with some more information, examples, and thoughts about multi-purpose networks. Appreciate your input.
Thank you for the time.
Two last speakers. Yudi, are you here? Yes, you are. And you don't want to speak. Well, we're delighted to have you all the same. Alan, you wrote it so fast at the end. Horwitz. Well, that's easy enough. You can read it. Pacific Coast Cabling. Thank you for making time for me today. And let me introduce myself. My name is Alan Horwitz. I'm the Vice President of the Networking Division for Pacific Coast Cabling. And we're one of the systems integrators I just mentioned. We're guys who actually built these networks. And the one that we're engaged in that I think is the most relevant to what you're doing is the deployment that we're trying to do for the city of Marfa, California. And we have deployed the Provost technology at the city of Marfa, and it is a public access network funded by the city and intended to provide internet access to, you know, the public for the city of Marfa on a per-fee basis. They're planning on launching the network in the March timeframe this year. The RFP was released in August of last year. We competed against many other systems integrators, and we won the competition, and the contract was given in late September, and we began construction in December, 1st of December. And the network actually was fully deployed and is built out right now. At this date, fine-tuning is being done as we speak, and again, we're targeted to release in March. But I didn't really come here to, you know, explain about long pole. More to, I wasn't really going to speak either, but after listening to many of the other presenters, there's a message that I hear reinforced, that I want to reinforce, and just amplify. Focus the issue a little bit on this. You're dealing with technology, and all of you are experts in technology, experienced in deployments of technology, and you know the adoption curves and the way things work in the world today. We're in a time of great and powerful technological change and social and economic change. And the trick, I think, to being successful in this world is to pick carefully what you actually decide to build. And so, you know, we know there are future technologies like LIMAX that are on the scene. And yes, that's a powerful technology, but yet still at least a year away from active deployments, except in potentially pilots. And the standards around LIMAX are not yet solidified. They will be, and they will be more powerful, and they will be a next generation technology. But until they are solidified, where exactly is it going to go? So what do you do on Monday? What do you do today and now? And I think I'm on the page that the Wi-Fi technology that is available is a good investment as long as you don't bite off too much to chew on. And I think the focus has to be as many investments as in the applications. You want to choose to deploy active networks that have a purpose for the next 2 to 5 years, something that you know will accomplish goals in a short window of opportunity. How to fund these networks, I think, is the biggest challenge. As a small systems integrator, and by the way, Pacific Coast Cabling is a wide-ranging, you know, systems integrator. We work for a Los Angeles-based company, headquartered in Chatswood, California. We've been around for 20 years, so we've been in this business some time. We've lived through many, many technological changes. And especially in the area of Wi-Fi, you have to look at a 2 to 5 year window, because at the end of this 5 year window, there'll be new technologies that are going to be powerful. And however, why do you want to do that? So knowing that the technology has a shelf life, why would you want to invest in it? And I think the answer is in something that Jim said earlier. There are, the numbers vary. I've heard 75 million, I've heard 125 million.
Wi-Fi devices already deployed and sold in the marketplace. These are 75 million devices looking for a network to plug into. The city of Los Angeles has a very unique opportunity to be on the leading edge of providing that access network, whatever, in whatever format it is. And I, for one, am excited that this process is in place. I would love to be a part of whatever you choose to deploy, and I'd like, I definitely have some ideas of what those things should be. I have a copy of your RFI, and I'm definitely getting a response from this.
Great.
And I'll let you know in that format what I think you should do, you know, on Monday.
That's a great set of comments for us to sort of head towards conclusion here. Keep in mind, we are charged with a five-year vision, not a next-year plan, but we definitely do appreciate the insights, and we do have to figure out where the technology will be in 5 years while we're at it. So any input on that side would be much appreciated. Comments, questions from the panel? If not, I do want to thank you and thank everybody who not only came but listened, and those of you who spoke on the round, much appreciated. The panel's work, as I said, is going to move into the draft writing kind of environment next, and we'll be taking all of these issues into account, and have learned a good deal here tonight that we appreciate knowing. I think that the next meeting will not be in the Valley. I apologize to our Valley friends, but we'll probably move it around, and we'll let you know. And if nobody else knows, Mark will know, so you just check his website and he'll tell you what we're doing. Mark, any concluding thoughts from your perspective from the mayor's office?
Again, I'd like to thank everyone for coming tonight, and on behalf of the mayor, I would also like to thank the panel members for their participation and contributions, and Morley for your leadership. Thank you.
Thank you all. Cookies are still there. It's a good night. See you all, and here we go.